You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das.
I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepti Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology
and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome to Tech Etc., your favorite tech podcast. And we are back from a very exciting Google I.O. 2024, where we got to spend some time with Google's CEO, Sundar Pichai, no less than that. And we also had a very interesting chance run-in with Sergey Brin, the founder of Google, who happens to be very invested in Google's present proceedings. But it's not just Google who's in this entire mood for technology and mood for big scale tech conferences. Microsoft's Build, as we record, Microsoft's developer conference Build gets underway, and Apple's own developer conference, WWDC, is expected to follow soon. So this is the time when all the large companies, Leslie, you've been tracking this for many years. This is the time when all the tech companies come by to showcase the latest technologies that they're working on. Google, of course, I was there at I.O. myself. Google showcased a bunch of things, including Project Astra, which is their generative image recognition and memory interface. And they also showcased Project Starline, which I found pretty interesting, which actually, for the first time, I saw a holographic display in the format of a video conference, which seems to work, of course, in a controlled demo, but exciting demos coming through from Google. But Microsoft's Build is getting underway. And today, given that we are in the thick of things with big tech, this is probably the best thing to talk about. Leslie, I think you've been kind of tracking Microsoft's the progress with Microsoft Build. Have you kept a track of their announcements? I think they brought out Copilot PCs.
Yeah, I think that is the main announcement that one would talk about, because the whole, the point here is basically that AI PCs are clearly here to stay. But whether, those of us who have been using these traditional PCs at home, the ones which we have been using with the CPUs, the central processing units, whether we need to, just chuck them out and get those AI PCs, that is the basic question in mind. So I think it's important to clarify over here. There are two or three things. One, of course, is that when you look at an AI PC, the fundamental question is, what is an AI PC? So clearly, exactly. So while our traditional PCs, which includes laptops, tablets, etc., they have like CPUs or the central processing units, which can be likened to the heart of a PC or the heart of a thing. So those basically run what are known as central processing units or CPUs. Now, you also, you are a gamer, so you know exactly where in gaming you use GPUs, graphic processing units. And these graphic processing units are used for AI, to run AI models, which is, explains why, NVIDIA is a $2.3 trillion company today, because AI is the focus of the day. Now, interestingly, if you remember, I had done a piece on Gen AI smartphones. Because we had already spoken about, running these Gen AI models and AI models on the devices. Now, this is the crux. If I want to run something on a device, I require it to be more powerful. It's a very simple thing. And if I require, my processors have to be that powerful, which means I either have to have a CPU or I have to run it on a gaming CPU, which again requires the GPUs have to be more powerful, or you could run what is known as a neural processing unit. So now what these AI PCs have done, they have got a CPU, which is a central processing unit. They have a graphics processing unit, which is a GPU, and they have a neural processing unit. Now, what the NPU specifically does, it helps these, the devices to run the models on the device itself. So that is the crux of it. It's edge computing, to technically what we've been talking about, edge computing, that is what it does. And the sale of all these AI PCs by virtue of the definition itself and the cost would say be in the range of 1.5 lakhs, you know, anything that is 1 lakh above. So this would be more for commercial use. Of course, with time, the prices will go down. But I was just looking at some of the predictions or the forecasts by Gartner and IDC. So according to Gartner, this is the February forecast, so it's not a long way off, just 3 months. So worldwide shipments of AI PCs and Gen AI smartphones, they are projected to total 295 million units by the end of 2024. And imagine, in 2023, it was just 29 million units. So look at the 10x kind of...
almost a 10x jump.
Absolutely. And you look at IDC report, it's very similar. So they say that, and okay, now IDC defines it as PCs with, a system on a chip, which is known as SoC capabilities, which, you know, will help the PCs run generative tasks locally. Again, edge computing on the device. And their prediction is that these AI PCs will rise from nearly 50 million units in 2024, okay, to 167 million in 2027. Now, of this, by the end of this forecast period, that is 2027, AI PCs are expected to represent almost like 60% of all PC shipments worldwide. This is an IDC prediction. Now, this is pretty interesting because what IDC has done is it has excluded all those PCs that actually run with, wherever they can run with GPU workloads, they have excluded that. So they are just talking about those AI PCs which have got a CPU, a GPU and an NPU, which I just explained. Now, there are two announcements that are important here to just, for the benefit of our listeners. One, of course, is since you're familiar with Intel, it is the Lunar Lake. So this is the upcoming, client processors. This is just a code name called Lunar Lake. Now, Lunar Lake, what is known as the Copilot Plus experience. Now, I think... interestingly, Microsoft does not like to call it an AI PC. So it calls it a Copilot plus AI PC. Hey, it's a matter of,
it's all a branding and nomenclature game. But I've also wanted to understand one thing, Leslie, on this note. For the longest time, we've been hearing that most of the GPUs, at least the more powerful ones, are good enough to be able to run a lot of local AI workloads. On that note, why can't...
They're very expensive. Which is the reason why you require an MTA. So that's... It's the cost, basically. And one is the cost. Second is the availability. Remember, NPUs use a different kind of architecture, which is the ASICs. Yeah. So the point is of the kind of approach to these things. GPUs, the problem is also there's a supply chain problem of availability. At one point in time, the US and China relationships are strained at this point in time. So TSMC is the one that actually is helping out NVIDIA with the GPUs. Now, when you have a supply chain problem, you are going to have this big problem if you are trying to run a PC on a GPU. As it is, it would be an overkill for an AI thing because you are a gamer, so you know how it is.
Right. That is true.
And cost, it's basically also the cost and availability.
Right. That is where... But there's also a lot of demand a lot of debate around what constitutes an AI smartphone and an AI PC. There have been, debates on...
Like what?
Because how do you bifurcate what is an AI PC and what is not an AI PC? Is it just a hardware classification difference?
So that's what I said. That's when AI PC, according to the definitions of Gartner and IDC and Intel and all these things, it's clearly that they have to have a CPU, a GPU and an NPU, the three components.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's, I think there's clarity on that part of it. So I do not know what the debate is all about.
Do you sort of envision like a near-term future where even smaller AI models can run on, say, even more basic laptops which do not come with a neural coprocessor like the ones we see on, say, Apple's devices or the new Intel processors powering Windows laptops?
See, it's not about whether you cannot run it. It is about whether you want to run it. If you have got a tool that makes it a little cheaper to run it, then you'll probably want to use that. So it is like you can use a drill machine to hammer a hole in a wall. But if you use the same kind of drill to go through, say, sponge or to go through some kind of, a more viscous kind of material, it may be an overkill. I mean, why would you want to do it? So that's what. And it's also a question of cost, as I said. Everything at the end of the day boils down to cost.
Of course. And it's interesting because by now, I think this year, I've ended up attending two of the four big tech developer conferences, NVIDIA GTC in March and now Google I/O. The one key thing to note is that, for the longest time, NVIDIA's core product and history were gaming processors. And gaming was NVIDIA's big thing. This year, when Jensen Huang took to the stage and presented and spoke about, brought out the new GPU architecture that is Blackwell, he did not speak about gaming at all. And same with Sundar Pichai when he took to the stage at Google I/O. There was no mention. Right at the very end, there was a little bit on what Android is doing. But even Android's updates are about AI. So everything is right now about AI. We're looking at pretty much an AI overkill. Is this the right way going forward? Do you think this is what is going to be like for the most top tech conferences, at least maybe in the next 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, unless quantum tech takes over as a discussion point, I'm sure it is going to be a lot about AI. See, look at the history of AI. You have, while AI, everybody says it's a 60-year-old technology, while everybody keeps on repeating in every forum that it's a 40-year-old, like machine learning has been around for 40 years, that's not the point. The point is basically the maturity of any technology when it comes into the enterprise space, when companies start picking it up, implementing it, and then understanding the value. So when you had ChatGPT say 2 years back, which sort of heralded the the onset of what we today know as generative AI, because they have already been around for 6-7 years with transformers, etc., and with the general generative adversarial networks, the GANs. But now. Everybody, generative AI became a household name. ChatGPT became a household name. So everybody started getting excited about it. So consumers start getting excited. We started playing around with it, right? We all started generating different kinds of. But when you get it to companies, when you get it to the enterprise space, that is where, you start you start questioning things, because enterprises cannot fool around with technology and, because they will run into a lot of serious problems like hallucinations. They would run into these problems. Right. If the AI models start making up stuff and etc., because it could get them into serious legal problem. It could get them into trademark violations. It could get them into IP violations and many other such issues. Yeah, and we have spoken about this at length. Deepfakes.
Right.
Imagine that happening in a enterprise setting. So, customers, users are more forgiving. We'll not, which company will try to, if there's a user sort of, horsing around with one of these tools and create something which goes viral, a company may or may not, sue that individual because it may not be worth their while. But if another company uses this kind of tool and makes a mockery of some other company and starts affecting their brand name or something like that, what will follow? A legal suit, which is what happened with OpenAI and New York Times, etc., on plagiarism, etc.
Absolutely.
So that is how it actually flows. I think AI, generative AI, clearly are going to be kind of thing, because AI is sort of matured. Traditional AI, which is what is known as predictive AI, has matured over a period of time. Now, this generative AI, which gets into generating new kind of content and which, gives you that leverage of doing a lot more with the stuff and which complements traditional AI, this combination is going to take a little more time, say another 3 to 5 years to mature. And so,
and
yes,
with that, we'll hopefully see more kinds of more developed user interfaces as well, the development of which is a very key aspect of popularizing the technology.
Yeah, of course, because you see, you're already seeing the Deshi LLMs that we're talking about. Look at the application. So I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. We are just going to see a lot more. Look at AI. It took a lot of time for AI to mature. Generative AI also now in drug discovery and this. So whatever you used to do with traditional AI, you are going to enhance it with generative AI.
Right.
That's going to be fun. Of course, what is going to be the impact on our jobs? What is going to be there? That's interesting. But coming back to our Microsoft event, the interesting part is they also introduced a new AI feature called Recall. I found it a little unsettling. I know that they have said that you can, stop a particular app or website from being tracked by the AI, or even turn off the feature altogether. But basically what this Recall does, it provides a photographic memory to the new laptops. So allow users to remember things that they have previously seen on their PCs. It's supposed to help search, it's supposed to change everything. But, I sort of shudder when, to think that, PCs have memory and they can think about it. It's a good feature that it may help you, think about certain things. It could also make you lazy. It could also throw up things that you don't want to, unpleasant things that you do not want. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
I think Google also showed something similar with Project Astra and showcasing in that how AI can recall, it's still in the very early stages, but eventually they expect AI to be able to recall your face and, like you said, recall a past mistake that you did, recall, something that you said about a friend, and imagine your friend is visiting you in your room and your AI blurts out something you mentioned critically about your friend in front of your friend, which might be a little embarrassing for people. But yeah,
an understatement here.
We've been kind of being very nice about things here. But it is something. But it's interesting because at the heart of giving AI memories is giving it the ability to comprehend an object and recognize it across various forms and dimensions in the long run. It's like how, if I get a haircut, if I suddenly sort of go bald, would the AI be able to recognize me?
Are you insinuating something?
I'm just saying that, if I do that, I don't think even you would recognize me or probably acknowledge me for a bit.
We may look similar.
Or that's the sort of the better part of the things. But no, it is...
So that's the problem. Every feature has a good and a bad aspect to it. I mean, that's part of the game.
Right. Absolutely. And in fact, on that note, Leslie, I'd like to bring your attention for a brief bit. I know we've been told by our producers that we need to wrap up soon. But for a brief bit, I'd like to bring your attention to this thing called Project Starline by Google. It reminds me of Microsoft's Project Holoportation, where they used 3D depth sensors and cameras to create a depth map of people in front and then show people as very real three-dimensional virtual characters within the HoloLens display unit. And Google's idea is that, they'll set it up in boardrooms where, there is space enough for a light field display and multiple cameras surrounding such a display. And they hope that eventually enough boardrooms are going to adapt it. They have tied up with HP, and they hope that it's going to be adapted commercially from 2025. But very interesting that suddenly tech companies are finding a way back into the entire conversation around holograms and a 3D visual experience instead of just 2D. What are your takes on it? Do you think we really need science fiction displays in our lives? I mean, it'll be cool, but where do we go from here on that?
See, these are exciting projects. I always see them as that you have to keep on trying out new things. Initially, they could be intimidating. They could, you know, sort of raise quite a few questions. But at the end of the day, like if you remember simple things like telepresence, have they have enhanced the, you know, need for being in the same room. And that, I mean, imagine the kind of help during the pandemic that, you know, it gives you kind of realistic thing. You may, you know, sort of reduce costs of, you know, traveling to other countries. And especially because most of the teams today across the world are global teams. So you're collaborating with another global team across the world. So I think that's important because where you cannot be physically present, whether it is because of your time limitations or whether it is because of costs, etc., these are always, you know, sensible approaches to the entire thing. And I think what would be important also at this point in time is to improve the spectrum and, you know, get proper connectivity. Otherwise, you'll have all these tools which look very tiny, but at the end of the day, you may have a very bad connection and everything will go for a toss.
I mean, I wonder how a pixelated hologram would look like. It'll be really funny. It'll be like Minecraft or something.
I'm sure they will work with you know, a lot of compression techniques. They will work with a lot of I'm sure
they do within
time, but it will, you know, it's just that because there are a lot of technologies like compression technologies and other technologies that are helping, you know, sort of
absolutely
a seamless kind of experience. But yes, definitely I think we need to give these things a shot. I mean, there's no harm in it. Anybody can fly
absolutely
to Paris for a meeting.
Absolutely. No harm in giving holograms a shot. I've been a big fan of, you know, the Tony Stark displays and the Star Wars displays. I'd love to have that.
We'll probably get used to that also. It's just a matter of getting used to it. See, today we started, we use Slack, we use Teams, we use, I mean, we should never use Gmail for that matter of fact. Then suddenly we have stopped. Most of us hardly look at Gmail. We used to use WhatsApp. Then we started using collaboration tools. So, you know, gradually you have to, you know, get used to it. Some things you adapt to, some things fall by the wayside. And that's the way technology progresses.
Right, absolutely. And on that profound note, it's time to end this week's discussion. And thank you so much for that very precise summation, Leslie. This is a very nice emoticon. For those of our listeners who cannot get the visuals, we'll one day produce behind-the-scenes bloopers, which would be an interesting segment in itself. We're probably going to make an episode just about bloopers and speak about bloopers one day.
But that's when laptop, when our devices have recall.
Yes. And on that note, it's time to end. Thank you so much for tuning in as always. And do write to us, do follow us, and do give us a shout out for anything interesting that you've heard across any of our episodes, or if anything new you'd want us to speak about in the next episode. That's it for this week. See you next time. Thank you and goodbye.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Techcetera.
You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.